a better way. You don't have to be another face in the crowd. Well, hi folks, this is Jack Spirko with the Survival Podcast. Welcome to an episode of Friday Flashbacks. After 15 years and hundreds of interview shows, we decided to run them as flashbacks every Friday. Beginning with the oldest of them and going forward, there's a tremendous library of wisdom in all the great interviews we've done over the years. So sit back and enjoy. Whether this is your first time or even your second time around with today's episode, I'm sure you will enjoy it and learn a lot from it. And remember, you can help support the Survival Podcast and the work we do just by becoming a member of the Survival Podcast Members Support Brigade. If you do that, you'll get access to over 70 awesome discount codes on products and services you likely already use. Things like seeds, cannabis products, food storage items, custom roasted coffee, and even cool stuff like ammo and moonshine stills and more. So support the show, get all your money back and more. Just go to thesurvivalpodcast.com and click on members to learn more and sign up. Now let's get into today's Friday Flashback. And today we rewind back to July the 26th, 2011. This was originally episode 710. Holly Hirschberg from thedinnergarden.org. Like many of these older episodes, in fact, all of them, I always check. I go through the links on the original show notes. Now, the new show notes have, like, current stuff, but I always include links in the flashback notes back to the original episode for people who want to go back and find those. And I've done that today. What I have done is I have removed the hot link from dinnergarden.org, her site that she discusses here. It still exists, but it's not her site anymore. It's like on growing flowers and stuff. Like somebody probably picked up the domain or whatever. And but like the Urban Organic Gardener, Life on the Balcony, and Ample Harvest are all sites she mentions as well that are still available and still functioning great. And there's some resources I mentioned during this episode in our discussion that are in those original notes, and all of those still function as well. So that's all available to you. I did, when I was doing that little bit of quick research, and I do this mainly to protect you guys, so that you don't go to a site and assume that it's still what it was when the interview. I check it for you first. Sometimes they are parking pages if they're gone. Sometimes they're really not good places to be. Fishers and people like that pick them up and use them. And sometimes they're just defunct. Or sometimes they're like this one, just rebooted in a totally different way. In any of those instances, I will remove the old reference for you. And then it's up to you if you want to go still track down whatever you can. I really don't know where Holly is in this day and age. I didn't do any research to figure out where she is. But I wanted to say something about things like this. When you hear people with these initiatives like Dinner Garden, which was, and as you'll hear all about today, an initiative to help feed people and do so by providing them food and a way to grow food rather than to just give them money, which you never know where that's actually going. A lot of times when you give people who don't have money money, since they have created their own problems, they make their life work. If you teach somebody to feed themselves, you make their life better. Okay, instead of worse. So sometimes people will come up with these ideas and they'll really give it a go and it won't become what they had in mind. Their life will change. Honestly, I hope nothing's happened like this, but sometimes people die or get sick or get divorced or who knows? Like life events happen. And what I've also found is that when people fail to do things in a profitable way, they also tend to go away. So I have a couple pieces of advice that go along with this episode. One, if you have something that you want to do to try to make the world a better place, and then you listen to somebody that tried it and it didn't work out for them, that doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. For all we know, there's a kid that's about to graduate college or medical school or something right now whose life was put on a better course because of what Holly did all the way back, 13 years ago. There's just no way to know. When you take efforts like this and you put them out in the world, they have second, third, fourth, fifth order effects that you'll never know about. They're always worth doing. And including doing things that are just, say, mission-oriented, right? Where you aren't really trying to make a profit. My other side of it is it's always good to have a profit model. Do you know why the Survival Podcast is still here and we're in our 17th year of operation, and you can bet unless a rock falls out of the sky and hits me or something, that I'll be going, that 20-year anniversary. Like, do you know why? Because we make money. It's important to make money when you do things. If you do not make money, then things are instantly unsustainable long-term. Because when life events happen and I have a choice between doing a thing that helps me pay my bills and doing a thing that I really love, then I'm going to do the thing that pays the bills. If I get into that circumstance and I have a thing that I love that helps pay the bills and a thing that I hate that helps pay the bills, I'm going to probably focus on the thing that I love that helps pay the bills. And, you know, what I found is even little websites that I've had friends turn off websites like, why'd you do that? You don't do anything with it. It just sits there. Well, I have to pay the hosting fee and the domain fee. And, you know, they're buying, like, the cheapest hosting. It's costing them, like, $100 a year to keep a website up. There's an informational website that people like. They don't have to do anything. Like, you can't make $100 a year to pay for it? So please do monetize what you're doing. I'm not saying you have to monetize it from day one. I went 18 months before I took a dime with the Survival Podcast. 18 months. Then I introduced MSB, and it was an instant success because I took 18 months to get to it. So I'm not saying you have to instantly monetize, but I am saying if you don't evaluate what you're doing and figure out how at some point to back a monetization model into it, you can be really successful. You can run for at least 3.5 years because that's how long this thing had been running when she got on the show with me. You can get on great podcasts. You can get great press. She did. And again, I don't know why she isn't here anymore, but I'm telling you that when you monetize a thing, the odds that you will continue to do the thing and for the thing to grow and for it to get better go up. But just know this, when you see someone who took a shot at something and it didn't work and you want to do something similar, do not let their failure become your excuse for inaction. Do not let them add another thing to your list of things with your toolbox fallacy about, well, I need this and that and this. There is a real absolute advantage to just crazy initiative, to just getting started, to just getting going, to just making things happen, because a lot of what you're about to hear, Holly really did make some great things happen for a lot of people because she saw an opportunity to improve things for others, and she took it. It's a great sentiment to enter into a weekend during a Friday flashback with. So with that, let's go ahead and flash on back to July the 26th, 2011. And with that, let's go ahead and get into the main topic of today's show. All right, folks, as I said during the introduction segment, we do have Holly Hirschberg on the line with us today. Holly is the founder and director of The Dinner Garden. Holly, thank you so much for joining us today on the Survival Podcast.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate you inviting me on.
Well, you know, I was telling you when we were chatting before we got on the air together that I found you from a listener. I don't remember which listener it was, but somebody saw you. I think they saw the CNN story and sent it to me. And I played your entire interview or their little video piece on the air. And people were like, you got to get this lady on. So we immediately hit you up and you're here now. But for folks that maybe didn't catch that episode, can you tell people what is The Dinner Garden?
Well, The Dinner Garden is a nonprofit. We're based in San Antonio, but we are national. And what we do is we fight hunger not by giving away food. We give away seeds and teach people to grow their own food.
That's really awesome. And, I've talked about programs like this before and somebody actually doing it, and I didn't know you guys were doing it, or I would have been just sending people to you. Here's one of the objections that I've heard from people, and I know this isn't true, but because since you're dealing with it, you're helping feed families, I'd like you to answer this. I get people that are kind of negative sometimes and say, you know, the people that are out there, they're on welfare or whatever, and if you give them seeds, they're not going to do anything. But you guys are making a difference. You're seeing people that are hungry to get an opportunity to do this and for the knowledge, right?
Well, you know, what we have seen are that people really want to make their lives better for their families. I think people get kind of beaten down is the way I would say it, that Yeah, that everything's always given to them. They don't ever feel like they can work to make anything better, and they feel like the work they put into a lot of things is wasted. With gardening, you can grow and succeed pretty easily. And I think people want to make their lives better for their family. They want to lift their families up. And when they realize that they can do it with just a little bit of effort, then it means a lot to them.
I absolutely agree with that. And can you talk a little bit about how what you're doing is cost effective and a sustainable solution to hunger?
Well, the seed packs we send out, when we send out a seed pack to a family, it costs us about $1.72 from start to finish. And that is including postage, including labor, including seeds, including supplies, and we give that to a family. That will grow a garden for a family of four. That family can save the seeds from what they grow and plant them again next season, and then save the seeds and plant them the next season. If a family plays their cards right, they can have seeds for the rest of their lives.
So let me get you to give out that monetary figure again. How much does it cost you guys to set up a garden to feed a family of four and do it in a way where, because I guess you're using heirloom seeds and they can save the seeds and do it again and again year after year?
$1.72.
So $1.72, yep. You empower a family to feed. So this is kind of like the whole, you know, give a man a fish and you feed him for a day, but teach him how to fish and you feed him for the rest of his life.
Exactly. We wanted something where we could work ourselves out of a job, where we get people food secure, where they can grow enough food for their family and their neighbors. Some of our gardeners grow and sell it to bring in income for their families. We teach people to garden using things they have around their house. We teach them how to compost so they don't even have to buy fertilizer. When we set up the dinner garden, I thought most people have dirt or can find dirt. You can make your own compost with food scraps and yard scraps, and you can always collect water from the rain or a river or something like that. But the thing you'd have to buy would be seeds. We supply the seeds for free, and you have a complete cycle there.
Because that is a big concern. I hear a lot of people tell me, but starting a garden up is really expensive. And, you know, I've done it both ways. I've done it with the really pretty raised beds and stuff like that and, you know, buying some soil amendments and all. But there are very inexpensive ways to get your garden off the ground, right?
Well, you know, gardening is just like any other, I guess, hobby where it can cost you as little or as much as you want. I look through those gardening catalogs. They're amazing. They sell compost bins that cost $300. And, yeah, those would be awesome, I'm sure. But, you know, mine's in a trash can. I originally had it in an old Rubbermaid container that I had in my attic and wasn't using. So there are ways you can do it. Yes, a lot of those products make things easier and, like you said, more beautiful. Some of them make things grow better. But you can do it all with what you have. There have been a lot of advances in gardening technology, and it's easier and more time efficient and uses less water than ever before.
And like when you send these packets out, what are people receiving? I know they probably differ because I know you get contributions from seed companies and all like that. But, I mean, what are like the main crops you like try to put in every backyard?
Well, what we do is we send out between 10 and 12 different varieties of seeds, and we try to get enough in there for year-round growing, depending on where the person lives. We try to do the basics like tomatoes and peppers, and, you know, most of our gardeners get that. Then we try to throw in, you know, a couple herbs or something that's unusual that they haven't heard of, because gardening should be fun, and we want people to discover something new.
Very cool there. I got another question for you, though, because, like, I was talking to a grower one time who had a CSA and basically didn't sell out his shares, and he had more food. You know, he had more food than he could really even give away to all his members, because even your members had a CSA, and for those that don't know, it's community-supported agriculture, where you're basically buying into the production before the season starts so that you're risk-sharing with the farmer. And the farmer was having a bang-up year, and he was taking things like Swiss chard and all this great nutritious food, purple top turnips and stuff like that, to a food bank. And then to his horror, he found out some of it was going to waste because people didn't know what to do with it, because most of the people who were coming to these food banks were used to Kraft macaroni and cheese and other things that cause, you know, type 2 diabetes and things like that. Great stuff for feeding our kids today. So are you guys also helping people know, like, once you have this food, how to utilize it?
Well, you know, that's a new thing that we're starting now at Dinner Garden, is we have some videos up and we're putting up some more in the next couple of days on our website at dinnergarden.org about how to use vegetables. And we put up so far, I think we have how to use a carrot, how to use an onion, what else do we have? a cucumber. You know, we started out, here's the thing, here's how I figured out that this was a problem. I didn't know that. My mother, you know, we've always had fresh vegetables because, you know, we were really fortunate when I was growing up. When we go to events, the watermelon board, the people who promote the watermelons, they sent me some flyers that were called How to Cut Up a Watermelon. It's a really nice little flyer. That's the most popular thing we give out at events. People see it and say, oh, I've never known how to cut up a watermelon. And I thought, wow, you know, I've been cutting up watermelons for years. To me, that seems like something everybody knows, but they don't. So we're working on that educational piece. We're trying to get the videos up so people can watch a short, you know, minute, 40-second video and know exactly what to do with the vegetables when we get them. Now, we also work with a group called AmpleHarvest.org. And Ample Harvest is awesome because when you do have the excess produce, like your friend did, they connect you with the closest food pantry accepting donations of fresh produce. And so you'd be able to get your leftovers with someone right there in your community who's having some trouble with hunger.
That's awesome, and we'll have to make sure that I get that from you when we're off the air so that I include it in the resource sections for today. And, of course, folks, I'll have links to Holly's website and anything that we come up with today that's a resource for people. I'll make sure they're in the show notes as usual.
I really
kind of want to talk more about what you're hearing back from the people that you're providing the stuff to. I'm sure you're getting a lot of feedback from people that maybe thought it was going to be hard and maybe even had a few struggles, but eventually they're finally feeding their family something they're producing themselves.
Well, yeah, and that's the great thing. We get letters all the time, and they're beautiful. Some of them I have up on the website. I should probably put up more, where people say, you know, I just didn't know how we were going to make it. And then it's just a whole new way of thinking, and it's not even really a new way of thinking. It's an old way of thinking that we're coming back to. And people are saying, in this time of joblessness when my family was so stressed, this was the one time we were able to relax and be a family when we were out in our garden. Or they'll say, you know, finally, my high blood pressure is under control because I'm eating right. My diabetes is under control. My doctor said he's amazed. You know, those are the testimonies we get where people are learning a new way and doing differently. And it's good. It's that you stop craving the junk when you start eating the good. And when you grow your own vegetables, they're so delicious that I know in my family, here's how it works. Whoever gets out to the garden first gets to eat what they harvest. And so, you know, we fight to get out there first to who gets the tomatoes because they're so good. And I think that's what a lot of Americans are finding now is they grow their own food and it's really good. And they don't have to say, you know what, I ran out of money, it's near the end of the month. It's okay, though, because I can go out to my garden and pick something, and I'll have food to eat, and my kids will have food to eat, and we can all go to work and to school and function, like, at our peak level. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I agree there. I've said a lot of my, like, presentations and things like that, that if we could get the average American family, every single one of them, to have at least, at minimum, a 4-foot by 4-foot raised bed garden in their backyard, we would put most of the psychologists and psychiatrists out of business. Most of the self-help authors would have to go find something else to do. Not that I have anything against them, but they would, because when you're doing these things, you're connecting with what I call being a real human being. That there's a certain part of us, and I'm not trying to be like real hippie-ish or anything, but we're connected to the planet. And when we put our hands in the soil and we actually create something for ourselves and our family out of that, we connect with that piece of ourselves. And apart from that, we can't connect with that piece. And then the other thing I remember is, you know, I started this show 3 years ago in my car, and I used to drive 50 miles to work and back every day, each direction, so 100 miles round trip every day. And I would come home from work, and I would go straight through the house, and my wife would just be like, don't talk to them. And I'd go out to the backyard, and I'd pull a few weeds, and I'd water the garden and or tend to whatever needs to do. And that would just pull me out of this, you know, like, what would you call it, suburban rage that I was in. So I think that the health benefits are so much deeper. Like, the food's so important because that's what we put in ourselves. But there's more to it than that. There's an emotional, spiritual, however you define that for yourself, connection. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. You know what I found? You know, my husband lost his job at the beginning of the recession, and my family was struggling just like everybody else. And I found that when I was the most upset and scared, and I think other people feel this way too, is when I sat in my house and worried. And what people need to do is get out. Get out in that sunshine. Everything's going okay. Things are growing. Neighbors are walking by. The world's still going on. It's not all about it's not all about the bad. I think when people are outside, you know, the sun makes you feel good. You're connecting with your neighbors and your family. And when you're out gardening in your yard, you know, there's a neighbor who's going to come by and want some squash and going to talk to you about gardening memories or something. It gets people really connected with their families and communities, and I love that.
You know, and I think another part of it is, as you're producing that food, there's a cliche that, like, every man that cares about taking care of his family knows and has probably said at one point in his life, and that is, I've got to keep a roof over our heads, and I got to keep food on the table. And you know, you can cut the grocery bill and do a little bit for the roof, but there's only so much the garden can do about keeping the roof over the head. But 50% of the equation is making sure the family's fed. And there's and that comes from mom and dad, even though men are the ones that are more likely to say it. When you realize that you have the power to feed yourself and your family, it's very liberating, and it's one thing you worry less about, right?
Absolutely. You know, I think we all worry about our kids. You know, the people I see, parents are really trying to do what's right by their kids. And one thing that I know as a parent I worry about is, when my kids grow up, are they going to be able to support themselves? Are they going to be able to live in a nice place? Are they going to have food to eat? Well, I know that my children will always have food to eat. My children know how to garden. My children know what plants are edible when they walk down the street. So I know, I mean, that's one less thing as a parent I have to worry about, because I know my children know when they're hungry, you know what, I have a fig tree I can go eat.
Absolutely.
And that's, you know, I think families are feeling that relief when they grow their own food.
And I think there's a big thing about getting the skill set back, too. And like you said, like, you'd be able to look at it, and if you know how to cut a watermelon or cut a pepper or cut an onion, you go, duh. But this knowledge that many of us, just because we grew up with it, take for granted, is being lost. I remember the one time I was at the grocery store, and there was this gal, she's probably 16 years old, you know, and I had a bunch of stuff from the produce section, and the first thing was, like, you know, asparagus, fresh asparagus, you pick your own and put it in the bag, and she looked at it, and she goes, I'm sorry, I'm new here, I don't know what this is. And I thought, well, okay, what's asparagus? Kids generally don't like that. And I was like, it's asparagus. And then she's like, the next thing, and I'm like, you know, it's parsley. And as we went on, I was just getting more and more depressed, and I'm like, they're snow peas, you know? And I mean, I was literally depressed to think that a person that grew up in America, which used to be the country that fed the world, wouldn't know what a snow pea was. And she worked at a grocery store. I know she's new, but I mean, you would think, but we do have to either fix this problem by teaching people or accept the damage it's going to do.
Yeah, well, you know, I talk to a lot of families who say things to me like, my kids don't eat vegetables. I know we did an event one time, and we had it at a Vietnamese restaurant. Oh, their food was so good. I had a mom call me and complain that it wasn't kid-friendly food. And we said, you know, what do you think kids in Vietnam eat? My kids eat this. You know, the thing is, kids will eat vegetables when they grow them themselves, when they have the good stuff. You know, I think they're used to growing up on some, you know, maybe subsidized food programs, or they're not getting the best quality food. And, yeah, it's gross. I mean, I remember we had, you probably had them too growing up, the canned and frozen peas.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't even stand just thinking about it. Makes me sick.
Yeah.
Well, I went to tour a garden at the food bank here in San Antonio. They were so nice. Garden was beautiful. The gardener said, oh, here, fresh peas, have one. And I took it in my hand, and I thought, oh, I'm going to have to eat this. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
It's going to be disgusting. I'm going to, you know. And, man, it was like candy. And I haven't stopped growing peas since. I eat peas all the time. I see them in the store fresh. I'm like, oh, yeah, peas, I got to get those. And I grow them, and, you know, they're wonderful. And that's the thing. If you don't like vegetables, you haven't met the right vegetable.
I agree. I always find it interesting when anybody says anything like that. I'm like, it's like saying you don't like food. You know, I mean, people that seem to say, I don't like beer. And if you don't drink, I understand. But if you drink, you say you don't like beer. Well, there's like 5 billion varieties. And with vegetables, there's, you know, there's not as many varieties as there used to be. And there's work being done by people to save some of the varieties. But there's so many things out there. And, hey, peas were the favorite food of our second president, Thomas Jefferson. So if it's good enough for Jefferson, I think it's good enough for all of us. But I do think that another part of this is, if you eat what I call institutionalized food your whole life, that's all you know, and you develop a taste for it. But what I noticed is, I was never big into institutional food, but I had my 10 years of darkness, as I call it, my slumber, where I was eating fast food and lots of stuff I really shouldn't have. And when I finally went off it, every once in a while you think back and go, man, that stuff, you know, it's bad for you, but it's really good. And then you decide, you know what, I'm going to go ahead, I'm going to get some. Like last night, I decided date night, took the wife out to a movie, and I got some nachos, you know, the gross kind with the yellow cheese and all. And I thought, these are going to be good. I ate like probably 10 of them, and I got up out of the seat because the movie hadn't started yet. I took them out and threw them in the garbage can because you've convinced yourself that that is what you want to eat. And then with kids, I have a solution to any parent that says kids won't eat what they're supposed to eat. Stop feeding them the garbage. They'll get hungry and they'll eat. And if they don't eat for a day because they're being stubborn, it's okay. They won't die. Sooner or later, they'll break down and eat the food. And once you feed it to them for a week or two, they won't want the garbage anymore.
Yeah. Well, you know, we work with so many families whose kids only eat when they get a free meal at school. And my thought on that is, you know, we need to make sure that they're getting the best nutrition possible. You know, as a country, these children are important to us. And if we can get them eating well at home, you know, these kids don't have food on vacation. They don't have food on the weekend. We need to get those kids gardening at home so that everybody has breakfast, everybody has dinner, even mom and dad, because they're the ones going out and working. And, you know, I think studies have shown that at the end of the month when the money runs out, mom stops eating. And we need mom to eat because mom is taking care of those kids. Mom is taking care of the family. Mom is having a job. You know, everybody works now. It's not like we have the luxury anymore of people not working. And so we need her to go to work and dad to go to work and everybody to have enough food. And we do that through gardening because there just aren't enough feeding programs, you know. And they have the programs where kids can go get dinner. And those programs, you know, are wonderful for a lot of families. I want families eating at home together. That's my goal. And I think family is very, very important to me. When my kids were younger, my kids are grown now and have moved out, but when my kids were younger, I wanted them home. I didn't want them going out to eat other places. You know, we needed family time. That's so important to kids' development. And when you have a garden, not only are they eating at home, but they're spending time with mom and dad learning how to garden. You know, this is something the kids can do while mom and dad work. Keep them out of trouble. Teach them a skill.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I also think we have a big problem with, we look at a lot of people that are in what we'd call our poverty class that are living on assistance programs or things like that, and they're eating the junk food. They're eating the institutional food. And, you know, when I look at that, and the average American looks at that, they go, well, one thing we say is the person's not hungry because there's a lot of obesity in that group. But I just heard something on TV, and I don't remember what show it was, but I think it might have been the doctors or something. Something my wife was watching, and I was kind of, it was in the background for me. But the guy said that 80% of the obese people in America are also malnourished. They're not impoverished from a caloric standpoint, but from a nourishment standpoint, they have a bigger problem than just the obesity. They have deficiencies in all of the actual nourishment and nutrients that they need to have, and that's because if you don't have whole foods in your diet, you can't get them. I personally don't even believe it can be done with a vitamin pill effectively. It has to come from food.
Well, you know, I've heard that too, and that's one of the reasons why we love working with Ample Harvest, and I talked about them a minute ago. They have it set up. You know, a lot of the food pantries don't have room to store fresh produce. Like you said, they don't have refrigeration. They don't have whatever. Well, Ample Harvest has it set up so that by the time the food arrives, the fresh produce arrives, it goes out that same day. You know, so it gets to a home immediately. And that's how they set up their whole system. So, you know, that people can have those good, nutritious foods. And a lot of the times the processed foods that people are eating don't have any vegetables in them or any whole grains or any of those things that are considered essential for building strong bodies and strong brains and people who can think. And that's where we end up with people being malnourished. You know, like you said, yeah, sure, the fat and sugar content's really high. People are obese. They have enough food to eat. They have the right kinds of food to build those strong brains, to be able for those kids to go into school and think clearly, for mom and dad to go and advance at their jobs because they're thinking clearly and they have the right kind of food to help them do that.
And I don't want to beat up on the school systems or anything too much today, but even when they do have vegetables in what they're cooking, first of all, it's had all the other crud piled on top of it and cooked into it, and then they cook it so long and so hard and it's been stored in such a way that any nutrient that was there, and since it mostly comes from big farms today, that a lot of times they have, you know, they use chemical fertilizer, which I'm not putting the chemical fertilizer down, but if it doesn't get combined with, you know, organic matter, the soils deplete of a lot of the minerals and nutrients and things like that. So the food's already bad to begin with. Then we cook the crud out of it till what was there is gone, and then we pile fat and sugar on top of it, and the vegetables that is in these foods become something with filler. And I think it's kind of back to what you were saying about how when the first time you were handed a fresh pea, you were like, oh man, I'm going to have to eat this. This is why kids don't want their vegetables today, because a vegetable to a kid is a carrot that looks like a faded yellow Crayola crayon, and it's got some greasy, buttery type stuff on it, and it's sitting next to French fries. That's yeah. What they see as a vegetable, and they actually think that people today actually believe that when you eat your French fries, you're eating your vegetables. A potato may be a vegetable, but I think when we fry it in lard, it ceases to be such.
Well, here I will tell you a story about an actual experience I had with the Dinner Garden, and I won't name names because it was a good group and they were really trying. We went out to visit a group who had asked us to come out and speak to their students, and we do a little exercise when we go visit kids, and we bring fruits and vegetables out and say, find the seeds. So we brought out like a watermelon and we cut it up and gave it to the kids so they could find the seeds in the watermelon. And we had strawberries and I can't remember what else. We brought a whole bunch of different things with seeds so that they could find them. Well, the kids were begging to eat that produce and they wouldn't let them eat it. Because it had, you know, it was against their policy for the kids to eat stuff that didn't come in through their food program. So for once, we saw it sitting on the counter. The kids had some sort of gelatinized fruit stuff sitting on the counter in a little container, and that's what they were going to get. And it really broke my heart because I thought, well, you know, I had all this fresh fruits and vegetables. Who wouldn't want to eat them? They look delicious. You know, the kids are messing with them. They're smelling them. You know, they're excited about it, and they can't have it. And that's a big breakdown, I think. And fortunately, things are changing in that arena now. You know, we're starting to see the Let's Move campaign and things, because when we first started 3 years ago, schools were allowed to have gardens, but the kids weren't allowed to eat anything in the garden.
Which, that's just obscene on this. I don't get that. I don't understand. I'm a real big fan of the, unfortunately, it got canceled in the second season, the Jamie Oliver show with the Food Revolution.
I know, that's good, isn't it? I like that show, too.
I think they ran it in the wrong time. You know, they ran it in the summer where it's kind of a weak time slot to begin with or something. And I'm hoping like some kind of second, like, you know, Food Channel or somebody picks it up. But to let kids grow food and to say, but you can't eat it because, you know, and usually it's some nonsense whenever that type of thing, bureaucracy comes in. It's just a safety concern. Well, it's probably safer than the, you know, 19 items that are listed in the ingredients on the food that we're eating anyway. But you did mention something that I think anybody that, if you want to get your kids to eat stuff from your garden, the starting place you just mentioned is strawberries. I look at strawberries, they're like the pepperoni of fruits. You know, like you
take kids, that's a good expression, I like that.
You know, you take kids to the pizza place and mom and dad want mushrooms and peppers and what do the kids want? Plain cheese or pepper, and I don't know a kid in the world that doesn't eat pepperoni. And I think that's how strawberries are. You take any kid, do you want an apple? No. You want an orange? No. You want strawberries? Oh, I'll eat that. And I don't think people realize this, but if you don't, like, make them swim in sugar syrup, strawberries are amazingly healthy. They're very low in sugar, very low in carbohydrates, but they have a ton of micronutrients. And if you can get them started, it's kind of like if you get a snake that's not eating well. I keep snakes. I know it's kind of an off-the-thing subject, but if you get them to take a small piece, you can just kind of, like, tie another one on the back and keep them going. And I think if you can get kids eating the strawberries, you can slip a pear or an apple in there, and next thing you know, you've got them on to a much better diet.
Well, I know that when we have children gardeners, what we like to send out, the weird stuff they've never seen before to kind of trick them into eating vegetables. You know, they're growing now purple carrots, or they're growing purple broccoli, or the yellow cauliflower, something that isn't what they've seen before, and they'll be more likely to try it. Because, like, with my peas and with my pea story, when I saw that, I thought, oh, my gosh. You know, and I know that a younger, less developed brain than mine would see it and totally shut down. You know, I at least had the good social grace to know I was going to have to eat it and be nice about it, where a child would just say no straight up. So we do try to send them some more interesting things, some things they haven't seen before, and plus some things they recognize that are, you know, pretty universally like watermelon.
For the people that are out there thinking, you know, I'd like to do this, and I'd like to start a garden in my own backyard, but I don't have a lot of space, Do you guys provide some ideas, or maybe you can just give us some of your tips on how, because I get it all the time. You know, I talk about gardening, and I've got 5 acres, and I'm, like, going, like, small-scale farmer with it now and all. And, but, you know, I get an email from somebody, all I've got is a balcony or, you know, a very small backyard, and I've got a lot of shade or what have you. What are some of the things people are doing to, you know, they don't have a lot of these people you're helping out, they don't have a lot of resources. So how are they making use of what they have?
Well, you know, people have more land than they think a lot of times. We do encourage people to grow in their front yards if that's allowed in their community as well. We can grow quite a bit there. For our apartment gardeners, we work with two websites that are support for our container gardeners, and that's urbanorganicfarmer.com and lifeonthebalcony.com. And both of those websites teach people how to grow a lot of vegetables and fruit and things like that, flowers even, in a really small apartment space. We have a volunteer who works with us who gardens on her headboard in her bedroom because she doesn't have room outside. If there's a will, there's a way. If you want a garden, we can help you figure it out. We also
can you give me those two websites? Can you give me those two websites again? I don't want to cut you off.
Okay. No, it's no problem because I forgot what I was going to say. It was Urban Organic Farmer.
Okay.
Oh, wait. Urban Organic Gardener. Sorry. UrbanOrganicGardener.com.
Okay.
And LifeOnTheBalcony.com.
That was the other one.
And, yeah, and they support our container gardeners. Yeah, but there are also options of going out in the community and getting a community garden plot. A lot of food banks offer them. A lot of churches offer community garden plots. And if your church doesn't, this might be something to ask them about. A lot of parks and rec departments. I know where I used to live in Virginia, you could rent a garden plot for $10, and that included water for the whole season.
Yeah, you know, you just said something that I've always thought about, and I've never, like, made a big push, and maybe I should, that I drive by you know, all different kinds of places all the time. But in America, there's two buildings that generally are really big, and one is churches and the other one's banks. And that might say something about two different mindsets. But most of the time when I drive past churches, what I notice is that most churches have quite a bit of land. Some don't, but most do. And a lot of times I see this great big grassy field, and I think, even if the church wasn't, like, running the gardens, if they just made some space available, and you know, they're doing good work, they want to help people, most of them do food drives and take clothes in for the hungry, or, you know, for the poor and food for the hungry and all, and if they would maybe practice a little bit of that teach a man to fish thing and make some of that space available, instead of growing Bermuda grass or Raleigh St. Augustine, grow some food, it might be a good use of that land.
Well, you know, we work with a lot of churches, and some of the churches we work with, their concern is just like I think most families are you telling me that I need to go out and till my whole backyard and then spend hours in the sun weeding and things like that? And, you know, that's certainly not what we want, because what they're envisioning is a ton of work, and it's going to fall on the overworked church staff anyway, and then it's going to look ugly. What we recommend to churches and what we've seen be very, very successful is the square foot gardening plots. We're working with a church right now, and they were actually featured in our CNN Heroes piece. You can see their garden, where they have, I think they started with 10 square foot gardens. Their gardeners share produce between them, and they donate it to other people in need. And then there was, they had one garden patch. When I was out there, I was talking to the priest, and they had one garden patch that someone hadn't been working with. And he said, they have people all the time come up and say, that one's empty, can I have it? You know, people
absolutely
want it, and it's such an easy way to do it. People are at church anyway. You know, a lot of people go to church 1-2 times a week. You know, it's nice to get them out in their community, and it's a nice opportunity to give people who might not have something else to donate to their community, give them a chance to give back.
You know, and I just had a listener email me, and she has like 5 acres. She got her dream place, but she's a single mom, and she's like 50, and her kids are pretty much grown and out the door, and she's finally gotten to this place, and she feels overwhelmed, can't really make use of the land. And I suggested something to her that I think maybe might work for churches here, with kind of the concern about the upkeep and all. And my thought was, well, why not put the beds in? And then instead of charging rent, you do it this way. For every bed you take for your own produce, you cultivate one, and that food goes back to the landowner, in this case the church, who would donate it. So that the people that are getting the space would take care of, you know, two spaces and get all the production from one. And I think there's plenty of people that would line up to do it. I know that there's, you know, and the other thing I've noticed about most churches, and especially like suburban areas,
they're generally not very far away from apartment complexes, and that's where the people that live in apartments are, in apartment complexes that don't have the land. And it seems like, you know, I didn't have this plan or anything. It's naturally coming to me here that that's like two sides of a problem looking to make a solution together.
Well, yeah, I love that idea. I never thought of that, and I'm definitely going to suggest that when we send out seeds to some community gardens. It's just a wonderful idea. People want to give back. They don't want to just take all the time. And like you said, the church probably doesn't need the rent for the land, but, man, that food, the food they got from a plot would be worth far more than whatever rent they would be able to charge anyway.
Absolutely. That's why somebody would pay you for the space. So if you could get the money for the space, you could use double the space and get half the production. That seems to be a win-win for everybody. And then there's no money changing hands, so that helps with the whole not-for-profit thing. I want to bounce something else off you. I don't know if you've seen this yet. There's a listener of mine, and I'm sure there's other people doing it, but there's a listener of mine named Larry Hall. He's got this cool stuff on YouTube. And he's building self-watering gardens using basically 5-gallon buckets, very, very inexpensive, wick, you know, like slot baskets, like are used in an aquaponics system. You drill a hole in the bottom of the bucket. You do like a 2 7/8 inch hole and stick a 3 inch one of these baskets down in there. And then you take a rain gutter and you fill it with water and you build a platform. So there's like a 2x4 or a 2x6 on both sides of the rain gutter. So there's a flat base. The bucket sits there. The dirt sits there. And if you hook something up that'll fill the gutter, you don't even have to touch it. Otherwise you fill the gutter maybe once a week. And the garden completely takes care of itself. I don't know if you've seen that kind of a setup, but
I haven't, but I would love to. You'll have to send me the link.
I'll send you the link to that. And my thought is, like, done in, like, it does look like a bunch of buckets, right? But I'm going to do it on the side of my house, and what I'm going to do is basically just the way you would skirt in, like, a swimming pool, build basically a box that all the buckets go in, skirt that in, and it could be in a churchyard or something that would look beautiful. But there's no weeding, there's no slugs, you know, there's, because everything's independent. If you do get like a really bad infestation, that's a soil-borne infestation, out comes that bucket, dump the dirt out, start over. And, it's one of the more innovative things I've seen.
Well, you know, that's what's so wonderful about gardening, especially now. So many innovations have come around. I mean, even if you just look at square foot gardening, which everybody looks at and says, wow, why didn't someone think of that years ago? It's so easy and it doesn't take any labor, and I can just go out and do the fun part of gardening and not the horrible part of gardening, which is the tilling and the weeding and all that stuff. So that's awesome. I love that. I want to look at and put that on our website for our gardeners too, because they're always looking for something new. You know, people don't have a ton of time, you know, and most of our gardeners are working one or two jobs. They have a couple kids. They're busy, you know, just like the rest of us. And they want to grow food for their family, and they want to do it in a way that's not going to steal all their time or break the bank. So that's wonderful.
Yeah, I got another one for you that I'm kind of playing around with it in a different way, but just, you know, bag gardening where you use a bag of topsoil, cut the top off and plant into it. But that can actually lead to a permanent garden. So one of the things I've seen people do that listen to the show is you take a sunny fence that gets good sunshine. You want to grow, let's say, something like a pole bean or anything with trellis up on the fence on. And you get a bunch of, and you do have the initial cost, but you can get them on, you know, clearance sale, big bags of topsoil for $5. And you just lay them on the ground, cut them open, and grow in your first year. And the beans grow straight up out of the bag. And then at the end of that year, everything underneath that bag, all the sod or whatever, has been killed, and there's worms down there, and you poke holes in the bag so that the drainage goes through. Well, at the end of the year, when you're done with your harvest, you just go back and take all the bags away and leave the dirt there. Now you have a perfectly prepared bed. You just plant into it, and, you know, it's no dig. It's no work. It's just laying down some bags and planting some seeds.
Well, I've never seen it taken that far. I personally have gardened in the bag. I wish I had known about just leaving it on the ground and then taking the bag out. That's wonderful. Who doesn't like that? I mean, how awesome to have fresh produce and, like, practically no labor. Here, a bag of topsoil at my grocery store is $1.80 for 40 pounds.
Yeah, and you want to use something that's more of like a garden soil, potting soil, than just a straight topsoil, because there's no nutrient value, and I kind of use the wrong term. But basically, yeah.
Well, I put in my compost. Yeah. I add my compost every day, maybe a little bit.
If you have your own compost and you mix it in with topsoil, that'll work too. And because of, like, especially like hot weather vegetables, they go crazy. I planted like a big L-shaped thing on this piece of my land that's like white granite rock. And they've been there like 3.5-4 weeks. And I've got zucchini that I planted from seed that's already putting on squash. I've got tomatoes that and it's hot, right? I mean, this wasn't a good time. This is why I did it, because I got to my new place late. I've got tomatoes that I put in that were 2 inches tall that are 3 feet tall, and they're just growing in bags because they get that warmth to their root system, and they get all the nutrient, and there's no pest activity hardly at all. Nothing soil-based anyway.
Yeah, and what a great way for people to start gardening. I know my friend Pamela from redwhiteandgrew.com, she always talks about that first tomato plant being the gateway drug to other gardening. Yeah, you get that first tomato, and then, isn't that great? And then you just can't resist. Then you need some beans, and you need some cucumbers, and next thing you know, your whole yard is planted, and you're harassing your neighbors to put in some veggies, and, you know.
The reason I said I can't believe you used that word gateway drug is that, you know, I teach preparedness on the show, and gardening is a big part of that. And, you know, you lose a job, you have a garden, at least you're still going to eat. You know, that's the base level of it. But my statement has always been that gardening is a gateway drug to prepping, because if you garden right, you're going to get more production than you can use when it comes. So some of you may give away, but some of you are going to go, this might be nice to have in December when it's cold outside. So next thing you know, you're learning how to dehydrate, or you're learning how to can, or you're learning how to do both, or you're learning how to blanch and flash freeze, and then all of a sudden you have food in the house beyond what you need till next Friday. Well, that means you're storing food, and if there's anything wrong, you have some food you can eat. Guess what? Now you're a prepper. Ah, gotcha. And that's exactly the term that I've been using for 3 years. Gardening is a gateway drug, and it's to a healthier life.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, the thing you said about the dehydrator is so funny, because I have 2 fig trees in my yard that produce hundreds of figs a year, to the point where everybody's like, please stop bringing them over. And we donate them to the food pantry, and we can them. And, well, then I decided I needed a dehydrator because I saw, you know, people dehydrating. So I thought, oh, I should get one. Man, Goodwill, $7. It was awesome. Yeah, and the thing about getting the dehydrator at the thrift store is you have to know what they look like, because they look weird. So you have to know. And I put a thing on our Facebook page that says, this is what it looks like. So if you see one at a yard sale, if you see one at the thrift store, you'll know what to do. People don't buy them because they don't know what they are. Now, here in Texas, we can also dehydrate just out in the sun.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's God's dehydrator. It's a great big giant ball of hydrogen and helium. And it does a really good
job. Yeah, here in Texas, easy to do that here. Absolutely.
Absolutely. But in some places, you really need a dehydrator, very moist climates. I get plenty of sunshine here in Arkansas, but I have relative humidity in the summer of like 82%.
Oh, yeah, so you're just going to get moldy.
You can do a solar dehydrator, but you've got to build it. You can't just throw a screen out there and toss stuff on it, because you're going to get mold before you get dehydrated. Now, zucchini dehydrated is awesome. That's how you make zucchini chips. And you take your zucchini and you just sprinkle some herbs on it and you dehydrate them. And what I did learn is if you want salted zucchini chips, take your dehydrated zucchini, mist them with a little olive oil, and add some salt on them when you eat them. If you salt them before you dehydrate them, you get zucchini leather, not zucchini chips.
Oh.
So you shouldn't have a mistake once.
That's good to know. And I have a zucchini story for you as well. I hate squash. I have always hated squash.
Really?
Because it's slimy. I had it once when I was about 7. And it traumatized me because it was so slimy and disgusting. A neighbor brought it over in a casserole.
Oh,
my mom made
it
eat it to be polite.
It had mush.
It was disgusting. Well, then the other day we were doing a video for Dinner Garden about how to cut up squash, and they had the fresh squash there. And I had it fresh and said, how did I not ever like this? What have I been missing? All these? It was awesome fresh. I couldn't believe it. Why would anyone cook it?
Yeah,
it's amazing.
If you're going to use it in a cooked dish, you do it like I did fajitas the other night. We got a pastured chicken, and we ate baked chicken the first night, and then I took some of the leftovers and I cut up some bell peppers and zucchini for fajitas. But like I got the peppers cooked, the chicken heated up all season, and then you throw the zucchini in, like when you pull it off and throw the lid on the pan for like 30 seconds just so it warms through, and it's awesome. But if you cook it, yeah, you're not going to like that. It's squishy. It's not squash.
It was gross. Well, I tell you this, and I have a zucchini. See, now I'm a fan, so I have one in the fridge right now. So I'm going to dehydrate it today. So
yeah.
You know, what kind of herbs do you put on yours?
I like to use, like, it depends on what you want, but like basil and cilantro are great on it. You can use dill, but
okay, I have all this.
But just do not salt it when you dehydrate it, because it draws the salt does its own drawing out. And if you've ever, like, seen, like, a fruit leather, you know, like, it comes out more like that. Zucchini doesn't work that way. But if you don't put the salt on it, it gets crisp, almost like a chip. And it's just absolutely, it's a great way to get kids to eat them, because they taste good. They don't taste like
what you think of even with well-cooked zucchini. It's, and you cook, cut them about maybe a quarter inch thick because they're going to lose a lot. There's so much water there. A quarter inch zucchini is going to come out almost like a paper thin Lay's potato chip, but a hell of a lot better for you. And as far as herbs, anything you like, you know, whatever you like on there.
Well, I'm excited about this now. See, it's like information from me and information from you.
Cut the basil.
We're both learning.
Use fresh basil because the basil's wet, so it'll stick. And then when they both dehydrate together, they it adheres to each other, so it doesn't fall off.
Yeah, I'm going to do that. That's going to be awesome. I'm looking forward to that. Well, you know, my kids, we always gave them, we'd make beet chips.
Yep.
And they loved them. That's one of their favorite things because it doesn't, you know, I mean, again, I had vegetable trauma in my childhood. I had cooked beets, like the canned ones.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever had those. They're horrific.
Yeah.
And, and you know, then you have them like as beet chips and you think, wow, why have I been missing this all these years?
So I've never made those. So do you do the same thing? You just slice them thin, throw them in the dehydrator?
Those we roast.
Oh, you roast?
Cut them thin, a little olive oil, some rosemary on them, put them in the oven. Oh, yum, delicious, like you're roasting potatoes.
I'll have to try that in the fall when I grow some beets. I couldn't get a beet to germinate right now if I did a rain dance and chanted.
Put it in your fridge, right?
Indian tribes to dance a circle around it, it still wouldn't germinate. But I'll have to try those because I've not done those. So, man, I always have fun when I bring gardeners on the show because we get to learn from each other. And I love what you're doing. So let's kind of wrap up with, you know, how people can help you and how people can get help from you. Because that's really, you know, your mission requires the two things. One is people that care and want to make a difference and people that need a difference made. So if somebody wants to help you out, how can they do that?
Okay. We always need donations. We need money to send stuff out. We need money to afford our supplies. There's a donate button on dinnergarden.org. We love donations. People can all, businesses and things can also sponsor us as corporate donations. And that's wonderful too. We love that. We have our business plans online so anybody can, we're an open book. So you can see exactly what we're doing with the money and where it goes. People who need help from us can sign up on our Need Seeds page. Now, we have been mailing them to people's homes. I'm working on a new system to try and get things out to people faster because we have had people on our waiting list for over a year, and that just breaks my heart. So I've been working with a friend of mine at Apple Harvest to try and figure out a way where we can get things out to people faster. If you need seeds, sign up on our Need Seeds page at dinnergarden.org.
Awesome, and I want to say something about helping out here and how big of an impact it can have. The number you gave me, if I have it correct, was $1.72 to send out this packet of seeds that will allow a family of four to eat out of that dinner garden and do it, you know, year after year after year because they can save their seeds.
Right.
If I take $20 and I divide that by $1.72, I get 11.62 and a whole bunch of numbers. So let's call it 11. So, but basically what that means is you can put food on the table for 11 families and some change with $20 to the dinnergarden.org.
Yeah, and you know what? You can put food on the table. That'll keep it there, keep food on their table for the rest of the family's gardening time.
And I know you can't say anything political, but I can, and I'm going to tell the listeners this. The $20 you pay in taxes is supposed to go to feed people isn't going to feed one family for a day. And that's a reality. And this $20 here can feed 11 families for a lifetime and spread the message and expand because – this is what I see when I see people start gardening. As they start to save seeds, they start to realize, holy crud, I can't possibly even use all the seeds I saved. So the neighbor goes, what are you doing? And they go, I'm gardening. They hand, the little kid hands the old lady next door a tomato and she goes, I remember when I was a kid and I had a garden and then next year when they start plants, they go, we started 14 tomato plants. We have room for 5. Miss Smith, would you like some tomato plants? And Miss Smith's planting a garden. And it's not just the family that you put the seeds in the hands of. When you're using heirloom seeds that can be saved, that spreads out through an entire community, and one family on one plot of land can end up supplying seed through multiple levels to an entire community. So I can't recommend that you guys do what you can to help these folks out and help them do the good work they're doing at a higher level.
Thank you. I appreciate that endorsement. That's so nice. Thank you.
They don't come often. I'll be honest with you. I don't ask the listeners to get behind things like this. It's not like something I do every day. I can recognize things when they're really making a significant difference. My wife and I were talking about doing things to help people that were in this type of situation just a week ago, and next thing you know, this dropped in my lap. So I believe kind of in fate entwining a little bit. So I'm very, very glad that we had you here. And I'll tell you this, you are absolutely welcome to come back to the Survival Podcast and do another show with us any single time you want to.
Oh, thank you so much. And you know what? I would love to come back. You know what? I'm going to come back maybe in a couple weeks and we can talk about the zucchini chips I made.
All right, that'd be awesome. And, you know, like, it doesn't have to be a full show like today if you want to do a 10-minute segment or a full show, either or. I'm just saying, don't not come back because you don't think you have enough to talk about. Because I don't know, frankly, I think you and I could get together and talk for an hour anytime anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I never have a problem with enough to say.
Well, folks, the site is dinnergarden.org. We had some great resources mentioned today. I'll make sure they're all in the show notes. I will tell you that the day that I saw these folks online, I went by their website and I made a small donation to them. And I think if all of us make a small donation, they can do a lot with it. Let me put it to you this way: if 11 people that are 11 families that are fed for every $20, if 20 of us do that, that's over 220 some odd families. And I think we can do a lot better than that with about 25,000 of you out there that listen every day. So let's see what we can do to put some food on the table of America once again. We all talk about doing it for ourselves all the time. Let's help others learn to do it for themselves as well. And with that, this has been Jack Spierko today along with Holly Hirschberg, helping you figure out how to live that better life if times get tough or even if they don't.
Well, thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Survival Podcast Friday Flashbacks. If you enjoyed today's show, please consider becoming an MSB member. Just go to thesurvivalpodcast.com and click on members to learn more. You can also support our show by going to TSPAZ, that's T-S-P-A-Z, TSPAZ.com. Anytime you shop online, and while you'll support us no matter what you buy, you will find over 500 reviews of items I have personally tested and vouched for. And to stay in touch with us and never miss anything, follow our channel or our group on Telegram. You can find links to that and all our social media options. Just go to thesurvivalpodcast.com and check the show notes for any episode.